First, a new book looks at the long history of medical quackery in the United States and says in many ways, dubious, ineffective, dangerous, and sometimes fraudulent cures are more popular than ever. In the 1920s, John Brinkley told men that they could increase their sexual prowess with a simple $750 surgery, sewing goat testicles to their own nether regions. In the 1950s, a preacher named Charlie Shedd told his followers to pray their weight away. In his new book, our next guest follows modern-day providers of laser treatments, ingested cleaning solutions, pH rebalancing, and other practices that claim to offer the one true cure to everything. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the history and present of dubious medical cures? Are there old remedies and cures you look back on and realize they didn't do much good? Why do you think that often fringe medical ideas gain popularity here in the United States? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Matthew Hungoltz-Hetling is a journalist and author. His latest book is called If It Sounds Like a Quack, A Journey to the Fringes of American Medicine. Matt, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me. Very, very excited to talk with you today.
Matt, you write in your book that this is not the book you set out to write. What led you down this particular path?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was writing this book during the early stages and kind of into the peak of the pandemic. And so I thought there were a lot of really interesting public health policy questions being raised right around then. There were questions about government overreach and the extent to which society ought to go to protect the whole from the individuals. And those debates, you'll remember, I'm sure, were really taking center stage as people discussed things like vaccine mandates and workplace mandates for masks and all of that. So I started to reach out to folks who had come into, some sort of butted heads with the official policies in some way, shape, or form. And I hope to have a really nuanced discussion with them about, you know, where we ought to draw the line when we weigh the rights of the individual versus the rights of society to restrict their movements. And when I started to ask some questions about that, what I found instead was that the folks on the fringes of the alternative medicine movement were so had been so radicalized by their life journeys that they didn't really have a lot of nuanced opinion. Their solution was abolish the FDA, abolish the CDC, prevent any government interference whatsoever. And so then my book kind of shifted into who these folks were and how they had become radicalized over the last 20 years. And that really proved to be a very interesting and rewarding journey to go through myself and to take the reader on.
You met people who invented the cure for everything, whether it was lasers or pH balancing, other things. And there's an interesting turning point in their histories for so many of them. They were kind of lone voices in the wilderness selling what they could, when and where they could. And then here comes the internet. How did that change things for the people you followed and the wider fringe of medicine?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, each of them had stumbled upon something that they thought was the one true cure for all disease, right? And medical science tells us that different diseases and medical conditions have discrete causes and therefore discrete cures and treatments. But they were kind of operating on these separate theories of health that they each believe would kind of revolutionize the way we think about medicine in the country today. And so that was what they had in common. Other than that, they had very diverse backgrounds. And before the proliferation of the internet, the only way for them to get their word out to the public was really to go through like the gatekeepers of medical knowledge, whether that was mainstream media or academic medical journals or university programs, things like that. And none of those institutions would give these folks the time of day, right? And so they were very marginalized. But once the internet allowed folks to reach out to the public more directly, then suddenly those gatekeepers were no longer an effective check on their power to go out and fly their wares to you know, either consumers or victims, depending on how you look at it. And so that was one major change in the country that brought us to our current state. Another change was that in the 90s, there was the passage of a federal bill that's referred to as the DSHEA, the DSHEA, that made it much easier for folks to market supplements and other products without having to prove their health and safety and efficacy before getting them onto shelves. And then the final third kind of magic ingredient in all of this was an active effort by the health freedom lobby to go out and court alternative medical practitioners and to tell them that they should reframe the debate away from whether or not their cures were scientifically defensible, and instead that it should be more about the American consumer's right to choose the medical procedure that they wanted, regardless of that procedure's safety and efficacy. And all those things kind of combined to make a real cluster quack.
Talking to Matthew Hungoltz-Hetling. His new book is called If It Sounds Like a Quack, A Journey to the Fringes of American Medicine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Randy is with us in Ripon. Randy, hi.
Hi. You know, this I'm 66, but it reminds me of the old Westerns when the guy came into town with his wagon and his special concoction and drink this. And I know for me in the 70s and 80s, friends were, you know, wear this copper bracelet or a magnet or drink this concoction. You know, there was always something, you know, and of course now with the whole COVID thing, my God, some of the crazy stuff that, but it seems like this has been going on for a long time.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. And Matt, you write in your book, there is a long tradition here, but it seems to have gotten supercharged, as we were talking about, with the internet and, as Randy mentions, with COVID.
Yeah, Randy's absolutely correct. And there's not a time in American history where there weren't folks out there trying to sell their snake oil and false treatments. And in fact, in the book, one of the topics I touch on is in the 1830s. When a medical freedom movement unfolded that has a lot of parallels to the one that we're in today, in that under the banner of medical freedom, many different healers with many different theories of healing came together and lobbied legislatures to make things easier for the public to buy their services and wares. And they were so effective at that time that they successfully overturned every medical licensing law in the country so that legally there was no distinction between your university trained medical doctor and your, you know, say, person who wanted to treat people with leeches. And so now I think today those elements are kind of in place again. And if they were to get what they wanted, that would be the same situation we would find ourselves in today.
Thanks for that call, Randy. I want to meet at least one or two of the people you profile in the book. Let's start with the lasers I mentioned and a dentist turned, I guess, inventor, Larry Little, if I'm saying his name right.
Larry Little. Yes. Okay. He's a prime example of kind of the life journeys that these folks went on. He was a high school basketball star, a successful dentist, a civic leader in his community in South Dakota, and was really in many ways kind of like an upstanding heroic presence in his community. But then he struck upon this idea that he could harness a universal healing light in his handheld laser devices, and that those devices would allow this light to cure every disease known to man. And he sold these things for like, you know, $12,000, and they had a little remote control, like a television remote control, where you could program in a 3-digit code and wave this device over your kidney, say, and clear out your kidneys, supposedly. And Larry, Dr. Little, he was a licensed dentist. He became so convinced of this treatment success that he went out and began selling these lasers for as much as $12,000 a piece, made millions of dollars, mostly selling them to sick and desperate people. And then even when he butted heads with the government, he refused to kind of adjust his path and abandon this idea. Latest chapter of his life is pretty tragic in that, you know, he was eventually arrested and sent to prison while in his 80s. And so this is one of the ironic things is that these stories have a lot of negative consequences, not only for the folks who buy the products, but for the sellers of them as well.
And briefly, with the FDA enforcement process, the FDA doesn't show up and arrest you right away for selling a fraudulent product. There's like, they literally go on for years saying, please stop selling this. Please stop claiming these benefits. Right. And this is like an incredibly long process that the people you go through in the book run into when they bump heads with the FDA.
Years and years. And this is one of the lessons that I learned while researching this is that we as a society don't really have a great answer to this one true curism. Like the FDA and other federal authorities and state and local authorities, they'll send you the warning letters. They'll come and do an inspection at your facility and send you, you know, items for correction. And as you say, it goes on for years and years before it enters any sort of criminal justice phase. And then the criminal justice phase is often years and years more. And all the while, the more stubborn of the one true curists, as I call them, just continue to sell their wares or maybe make some sort of token effort toward compliance. By the time they're really enforced against in a very harsh way, their personalities are so consumed. You know, their self-identity is that they are a healer with a revolutionary medical idea that they're being persecuted for. And they're so, and plus they're making, you know, in some cases, millions of dollars from these products. And so even when they go to prison, they tend to not show remorse. There was a fellow that I spoke to who was in a Colombian prison awaiting extradition. And he told me that he had, while in jail, treated, you know, 20 or 30 of the other inmates in this facility while awaiting criminal to face his criminal charges. For doing that same thing. So it's very, very difficult for us to wrangle with this problem as a society. We really have to go upstream and nip it in the bud somehow.
Talking to Matt Hungel-Tetling about his new book, If It Sounds Like a Quack, A Journey to the Fringes of American Medicine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest about some of the fringe remedies that he's been writing about, maybe that you've encountered in your personal life or hearing about it from others? Why do you think things on the fringe are popular? How about the middle ground? Maybe it's not something you'd encounter in a doctor's office, but it's sold on that supplement shelf. Call 800-642-1234. We'll hear more of your thoughts coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Matt Hungel-Tetling about his new book. It's called If It Sounds Like a Quack, A Journey to the Fringes of American Medicine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. I'd just like to say happy Easter to you and all your listeners. So my question for your guest is, I take echinacea from time to time. I'll take St. John's wort, occasionally melatonin. And on a lot of these products on the side of the bottle, it says that these claims have not been evaluated by the FDA, yet these products have been sold for quite a long time. And they've been, I mean, these are prescriptions or remedies that have been prescribed in the past, going back to ancient China, thousands of years in India. I mean, it's in the Ayurvedic medicine. So I feel like the fact that some of these things have been around for so long, even though they haven't been evaluated, that there's still some sort of efficacy and value to it.
Marcus, thanks a lot for the call. And Matt, when you're writing about fringe, I think you're definitely talking about things way fringier than the supplements Marcus is talking about. And also that statement he mentioned on a label, it might say supports immune system health or something, asterisk, not evaluated by the FDA. that's okay under the law. Could you talk about Marcus's comments?
Yeah, Marcus, I'm definitely not on the attack against anyone who takes any sort of supplement. If I was, I think I'd be criticizing virtually the entire country. But I will tell you that you as a consumer are left with a higher burden of responsibility for those supplements that you go out and you purchase from someone who's making money off of that product and who's operating under the same business model that other folks are without some of the oversight and regulations that you would see in other industries. And so, for example, some of the folks that I talked to who are in the supplements industry, they sold what they thought were perfectly good remedies in good faith to their customers. But then they would find out that somewhere back along the supply chain, someone was lying to them. And in fact, some of the herbal supplements can have the ones that are intended to produce more eye-popping effects actually contain illegal amounts of the very same pharmaceuticals that someone who's favoring an all-natural approach might be trying to avoid. And so I urge you, Marcus, to please learn what you can about the supply chain of that. And then just to respond to the other point really quickly, the fact of a long-standing tradition around a particular effect is the sort of thing that typically generates scientific interest and study of a possible remedy. And if it meets those standards and tests, they're typically incorporated into the practices of best evidence. And if they're not, then they're not. And sometimes the fact that something's been used for a long time is less of a selling point than you might imagine.
Thanks a lot for that call, Marcus, at 800-642-1234. Something I want to bring up before we run out of time here, Matt, it would be easy to write a book like this in kind of a mocking tone toward these practitioners and the people who buy things. I feel like you really don't do that in the book. You're very sympathetic. I want to focus in on the people who might buy these products to people who feel like our medical system has let them down, unequal access, expensive care, people not being listened to. You are sympathetic, I think, to people's desire to believe that there's a one true cure out there.
Yeah. I think all of us humans are fairly silly in our own way. We all have flaws of reason. So I certainly see pieces of myself in these folks who have stumbled down these very wrong life paths. And I think that is how we ought to think of them rather than as real enemies of the public health. The fact is that they're in some ways victims of their own delusions. And the real problem is that this has bred immense distrust of the whole medical scientific establishment, in part because that establishment is very flawed. Certainly medical science has some skeletons in its closet and a bad track record in some ways. But at the end of the day, it's the best tool we have for measuring whether or not a procedure or a practice is effective. It's responsible for having extended human life expectancy dramatically over the last 100 years. And, it's a shame that faith in these institutions is declining so rapidly. 20 years ago, vaccines were more popular, according to public surveys, than Dolly Parton, if you can believe that. Today, we have hundreds of millions of Americans who distrust medical science in general, and tens of millions of Americans who, during this most recent pandemic, had been led to believe that the establishment was so corrupt that vaccines were worthless. And that costs, of course, many people their lives.
Time for one more caller. Victoria is with us in Whitewater. Victoria, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Victoria?
Well, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I wanted to know. I have a cousin who's constantly calling me and asking me to research this product or that product. And many times they are Oprah Winfrey endorsed products, such as her weight loss gummies. And what does he, you know, I usually tell her if it really worked, everybody would be using them. But is that really true? Because if it takes a long time for the FDA to approve things, how?
Yeah, I think your cousin has the right instinct in that she's reaching out to someone looking for advice, and you are that trusted source for her. And so I think, you know, all you can do is try to turn to the folks that you trust in who have perhaps, you know, more of a professional skill in evaluating these sorts of medical claims. And yeah, I think when I see a media personality like Oprah Winfrey, like Alex Jones, selling products and making millions of dollars without seemingly a high degree of regard for the efficacy of those products, I think it's really sad, you know, and I think we need a system that doesn't create such a financial incentive to do this. You know, what one thing that I found in the study is that there's a higher risk reward benefit to selling illegal pharmaceuticals than there is to selling cocaine. You know, it's like 32 times more profitable to sell a pharmaceutical drug illegally than it is cocaine. And so, of course, bad actors are going to come out of the woodwork and take advantage of all that free space and free reign that they've been given.
Victoria, thanks for the call. And Matt, thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
That's Matthew Hungoltz-Hetling, journalist and author. His new book is If It Sounds Like a Quack, A Journey to the Fringes of American Medicine.